You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Hello and welcome along to the William Hill Racing Podcast. We're going to look ahead to Wednesday's action. On this edition, you'll hear it all live on Racing Radio from 1:30pm with Stephen Powell, Ollie Pimlott and Craig Forsyth in the studio. We've got action on the flat at both Catterick and Lingfield on Wednesday afternoon, accompanied by National Hunt Racing from Uttoxeter, more flat racing in the evening from Sandown, a bit of jumping at Worcester, and there's racing over in Ireland on day three of the Killarney July Festival. So plenty to look forward to. My name is Mark Walton, and joining me in the studio is Mr. Rory Delaghi. How are you, Rory?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good. Enjoying things at the moment?
Yes.
Yeah, pretty busy weekend, wasn't it? What do you make of all that racing happening at once? It's controversial, isn't it?
It is. It's the big problem we have in this country, I think, probably isn't with the midweek fixture. We still have... The racing programme we had yesterday was fine for the day. Fairly moderate racing. Same today, to be perfectly honest. It's just that we have a glut of fixtures and we tend to get all the quality coming... at one time. It does have upsides. We were discussing yesterday about how jockeys who would often struggle for decent rides whenever there are four or five meetings of high quality across the country will end up coming in for mounts they wouldn't normally get. Phil Makin got the ride of Master Carpenter, of course, in the John Smith's Cup. That would have been very valuable to him, valuable prize and a good cut for him. Obviously, he tends to be in demand at the northern tracks anyway, but that's a ride that would have gone to one of the southern jockeys in normal circumstances. We don't have enough good racing on a Sunday. That's a major issue.
Yep.
Other European countries have their best racing on a Sunday, Ireland, France, Germany, and we tend to have on a Saturday where we have four or five top-class flat meetings, the Sundays tend to be three jump meetings, even in the middle of the summer, and it's a rather bizarre scenario. We haven't quite cottoned on to the fact that Sunday should be a big day for racing.
Yeah, I agree. Interesting that you mentioned the jockeys in there as well, because the jockey's title, we have a new odds on favourite. It's not somebody you would maybe have expected at the start of the season. Sylvester D'Souza now 8-11 with us to win the Flat Jockeys Championship, given the injury to Ryan Moore, who's all the way out to 10s now. Richard Hughes 5-2, 7-1 for Paul Hannigan. James Doyle, Ryan Moore, William Buick, all 10s and 40s for Graham Lee. He's a pretty short price favourite. He doesn't think he should be that either.
No, it's quite. He said he should be 100-1, which is refreshing to hear from a jockey, to be honest, that he's got absolutely no idea how betting markets work. But he's clearly in pole position. He's just behind Ryan Moore. Ryan could be out for 4 or 5 weeks. And in that space of time, especially at this time of the year, this should be the richest time for flat jockeys. No one's really chasing the title, are
no.
they?
Exactly.
And that's the thing. I mean, and again, the issue we have with the jockey's title race is whether it deserves the hoo-ha that it's been given. And it's been restructured and it's been sponsored and it and now runs from the Guineas to Champions Day at Ascot. But at the end of the day, jockeys are more concerned with riding big race winners than they are chasing up and down the country at the end of the year to try to win a jockey's championship. Most who've done that in the past have pretty much said it was worth doing it to be champion jockey, but never again.
Yeah.
Richard Hughes is, I mean, I think Hughes would be delighted if he sort of falls across the line as champion jockey, but he won't be heading up to Musselburgh and Wolverhampton to take rides in November. Well, obviously, November doesn't really count anymore, of course, yeah. which is beneficial to them. But, you know, in the last weeks of the season, they'd rather be concentrating on quality than quantity.
Yeah, it's a market that's tricky, isn't it? I mean, if you look at recent years, Richard Hughes has won it because he wanted to win it. And
yes.
went out to win it. He's not necessarily going to do that this year, is he? So, and none of them really are. So.
Yeah, and Sylvester D'Souza says he's not going to try specifically either. The question is whether there's someone in there who gets a run of winners for whom winning the jockey's title would be hugely important. It would be for Graham Lee, for example, I think. And for Graham Lee to have spent so long as a jump jockey and then become champion flat jockey would be hugely important. And he's got a tremendous work ethic. So if he managed to find himself in a position, then I could see him chasing it. Sylvester says he won't. His attitude has changed a little bit in the last few years. He did chase it very hard a few years ago, second to Paul Hannigan. And then he got the job with Godolphin, which saw his winners fall off markedly. But of course, I'm sure his quality of life went up as a result, because the retainer there was enormously useful for a man bringing up a young family. So he's more about maintaining his position than chasing titles now.
Yeah. Is Paul Hannigan slightly too big at 720? He's going to get a lot of good rides, isn't he? He's only six behind.
Well, he's aside from his retainer with Sheikh Hamdan Al Maktoum, he also has the potential to link up with Richard Fahey, as he used to do in the old days. And Richard Fahey will be exceptionally strong at the Northern meetings towards the end of the season. The Ergo Cup meeting, for example, is one that Richard tends to farm every year. And Paul will be able to call on old alliances at that stage of the year. So he's an interesting one. And again, if Ryan Moore decides to, you know, if his injury isn't as bad as first grade, he's got fresh x-rays to have, and he's back in a couple of weeks earlier than expected, then 10 to 1 about him is potentially the biggest prize going.
Yeah. Yes, it's always a question with Ryan Moore.
It is a big call to go 10 to 1. I think I see it's only 6 to 1 elsewhere. I think it's probably correct, but it's bold. It's certainly drawing punters in. I think in normal circumstances, firms will push the price of a jockey out in that situation, and no one really wants to back him. I think Hills have taken a big move by going 10 to 1 and making that attractive to punters.
All right, well, we're on the subject of jockeys as well. Frankie Dettori, he's having a pretty good season, I suppose you could say. He's talking about riding past his 50th birthday, which is remarkable given the circumstances from a few years ago, and he almost gave up riding altogether. And he's a real crest of a wave at the moment, isn't he?
Yeah, it's great to see his enthusiasm back. He tends to trigger an awful lot of debate, and you know, he's had a slightly checkered past, but it's a little bit harsh to present it like that, given it's been considerably more up than down. But you know, from being stopped by the police to plane crashes to run-ins with the authorities in France, etc., it's been a bit of a roller coaster. There certainly were a couple of years where Frankie didn't ride with the belief and confidence that he used to have, and you got the impression that maybe he was getting tired of it. But he's turned the clock back a little bit. His link up with John Gosden takes us back a long time. John Gosden made him stable jockey when he was 18, a long time ago, and that kind of influence is very good for Frankie. And all of a sudden, he's enjoying life again. He's enjoying riding again. And, of course, he's riding big race winners. So it's not surprising to hear him talking about riding beyond his 50th birthday. But it would have been a surprise if you'd told me that was liable to happen 2 years ago.
Yeah. I suppose Golden Horn's played a big part in it, hasn't he? He's really brought back the excitement for him.
I think you need to have a marquee horse like that. But I suspect it's the confidence he gets from working with John Gosden primarily that helps him to have such a positive outlook.
Bit of on the news, Dan Skelton, who's doing well for himself at the moment, he's got a big recruit in the shape of Alpha Roth coming from Paul Nicholls. That's a big name for a burgeoning trainer, isn't it?
I don't think there are many big races left in Alpha Roth, especially as I gather he's going to get the same campaign this season as he did last. Because for me, he doesn't stay beyond 2.5 miles.
Yeah.
He's never really convinced, but John Hales has been determined to get himself a Gold Cup winner, and therefore he tends to look for Ascot Chase first time out every season, bolts up on that, looks a superstar. That's 2 miles, 3.5 furlongs, and then it tends to be a little bit backward for him. But at the same time, this isn't necessarily about Dan Skelton's chances of a Cheltenham Festival winner or a King George winner. It's rubber stamping his career as a trainer, and it underlines his relationship with Paul Nicholls. Paul Nicholls actually recommended the move.
Yeah.
I get the impression Paul Nicholls finds John Hales a little tricky to deal with at times. not in a Clive Smith kind of way.
No.
I think John is a little easier to get on with, but I think he is very insistent on what he thinks is right. And he's a very hands-on owner. I think someone like Paul Nicholls would like a lot of his owners to say, here you go, Paul, you decide what to do and I'll just say yes. So he's probably a little bit of a pain in the neck at times in the nicest possible way. But Dan Skelton will find that easier to deal with. I think he's a little more diplomatic than Paul is in that regard. And Alpha Roth he's a big name, and therefore it elevates Dan's name in the training ranks in terms of cachet, whether or not Alpha Roth goes on to win another big race. But of course it would be terrific if he managed to to do what Paul Nicholls couldn't do and win a King George or a Gold Cup with him. But it's long odds at this stage.
Okay. Glenn Eagles, apparently he's in great shape for the Sussex Stakes. That's coming up next week, of course, at or the week after at Glorious Goodwood. 4-5 at the top of the betting. Solo 13-8, 10s for Night of Thunder, A-Rod 12s, 14s for Tomor and 25s for Ivorwood as it stands at the moment in our betting. It's going to be billed again as another jewel on the down.
It is, isn't it? However you look at that, I don't think A-Rod did enough at the weekend to suggest that he's good enough to split that pair should they both turn up and run to form. So once again, it'll be Glenn Eagles against Solo. There's nothing between them on ratings. The difference is one is younger and less exposed and might just have a little bit more in the tank, and it's just a slightly sexier horse all round. Solo is a real honest galloper who might find a sharpish mile at Goodwood if it ends up being a small field race, playing against them slightly. He needed all of the mile at Royal Ascot to win the Queen Anne, but was very strong and impressive at the finish. But he will stay beyond a mile. He'll get a mile and he'll be a Champion Stakes horse if they wanted to go that way with him at the end of the season. So Glen Eagles may be slightly better suited by the course and distance from what we've seen of them so far, but they're both top-class colts, and it'll be a cracking contest. It's just a pity that races like this don't tend to attract bigger fields, but there's only so many top-class milers going.
Yeah. One race that usually gets a bigger field is the Goodwood Cup, and it looks likely that Ascot Gold Cup winner Trip to Paris is going to run there. He'd have a £4 penalty to defy for that success, but it's a bit of a rags to riches story, isn't it, with Trip to Paris?
Yeah, I was looking at his form from last season just the other day, because I napped one up in the old Newton Cup at Haydock. Was it Battersea? It was indeed Battersea. And Battersea won a handicap at Ascot last year, in which he had Trip to Paris about 20 lengths and 10 places behind him. Or possibly not 20 lengths, but quite a long way behind him in a handicap with not an awful lot of weight difference. And all of a sudden, Trip to Paris, who's not bred to stay particularly well, has improved markedly this season, stepped out 2 miles and beyond. Stunning win in the Chester Cup, where he looked more likely to finish 10th with a furlong to go than first. But Graham Lee gave him a tremendously confident ride to get up and win late on. And he showed that was no fluke by finishing second, looking unlucky at Sandown, and turned the tables with Vonderforce in the Gold Cup itself. So he's very, very smart. He's also, unusually for a stayer, got a very good turn of foot at the end of a race, which he's shown at Ascot. It wasn't a particularly strongly run Gold Cup, and it wasn't like he outstayed them over 2.5 miles. He had more tactical speed at the end of it. So the Goodwood Cup will actually suit him. It tends to be much more of a test of speed. The £4 penalty is never easy, but he fully deserves to take his place there. I'd be interested to see who turns up against him. And Brian Panther's been there in the past, for example.
Yeah. It'd be interesting if he does turn up. What's the situation with his injury? Is he?
Don't know. I didn't think it was serious enough to keep him away from Goodwood, but I haven't heard any headlines since. Obviously, we've got 2 weeks build-up now between now and Glorious Goodwood, so we'll hear plenty more about it. And I'd like to see him back on course.
Mm. Anything else got your eye on the news before we move on?
No, that's grand, I think.
That will do. Let's move on to Wednesday's action then. Rory's got four races for us, and we'll get his best bets on the back of this.
William Hill Racing Radio. It's everything to give you the inside track.
We start at Catterick in there at 4 o'clock. This one is a class 4 handicap over nearly 6 furlongs. It's for 3-year-olds and older. 10 of them in the lineup here, Rory. Several of them in pretty decent form as well. So who do you side with in there?
Yeah, it's a competitive looking race. And my initial reaction was that Best Trip was going to be quite hard to beat. But looking at conditions and the weather forecast for Catterick, I think it's liable to be on the soft side. And although Best Trip was a winner in soft 2 starts ago at Catterick, his better performance last time out was on reasonably quick ground at York. So I wonder if it eased a little bit, that might bring one or two others into the equation, particularly another Royal, who's very well suited by ground just on the easy side of good. She doesn't want it much softer than that. Her sire, Byron, was a very good horse over 6 and 7 furlongs with a bit of dig in the ground. And she improved in blinkers last time out. She wears a hood generally. She had the unusual combination of a hood and blinkers at Pontefract last time, and beat Sleeping Apache, a horse who goes particularly well at that track. Grabbed him on the line. The pair of them pulled well clear. That was a career best effort for her, and she's going places now. She's won three of her last six, and yet still racing off a mark of 72. So although she's up £5 for that, I think she fully deserves it. It's hard to knock her form generally. David Allen gets a good tune out of her. One at Pontefract was third and a huge field at Thirsk earlier in the season. And while she is a little bit strictly defined with best trip and form, it'll be very interesting to see how they price this up. I think best trip will probably be favourite. But I think another royal is hard to knock. And if she's an each way price, then she's well worth a bet.
Another royal for Rory then. In the 4 o'clock, the 5:20 at Uttoxeter is where we go next. This one is a class four handicap chase over 2.5 miles. We'll start here with last year's winner, River Purple, who arrives for another crack at the prize. Arrives here in winning form as well after a comfortable success over this course and distance last time. Bit higher in the weights this time round, but what do you make of his chances?
The race he won last time out was a pretty poor event. He'd run badly on his previous start. He was the rank outsider in a four-horse field against Larteta, etc. Larteta runs again. Sarah Humphreys gelding is consistent enough, but finds it very hard to win. He's been second in his last three starts, and I don't think River Purple had to improve. He just needed to bounce back to his form to win that race, and it's going to be much tougher off a higher mark. On the plus side with him, all his best form is at Uttoxeter. He runs here on a regular basis, generally runs well. There are one or two iffy runs in there. He's been unplaced in his two previous runs at the course before winning last time out. On the whole, you should get a decent run from John Mackey's horse is going well. Darrell Jacob, who won them last time and wasn't riding them for those poor rides, is back on board again. So he's one to consider, as are the improvers in there. Susie Sheep, who I'm not a big fan of, but she did step up on her fairly modest hurdling form when chasing for the first time. She was a Mares Point winner in her debut before joining David Pipe. Was disappointing on the whole in bumpers and over hurdles, despite getting market support on a regular basis. But she ran very well to be second here on her chasing debut behind Urquhart. That form looks solid enough. It makes her the one to beat on form, and she should step up on it, given that she's only a five-year-old. So she's liable to head the market, and I respect her chances, but she's never particularly impressed me with her attitude before. So I don't think she's one to back at a very short price. As I said, Larteta tends to be placed but doesn't win. Mortalstown won in a second chase start. He'd excuse his first time over fences when losing two shoes. He's only a seven-year-old with limited experience, so there should be more to come from him. But there could be a bit of value in here, saving the best to last. Kerry Lee has taken over the license from her father, Richard, who trains for a long time, both under rules and prior to that in point-to-points. And Highway Code, who's got top weight, has dropped £2 below his last winning mark. He didn't do particularly well last season, to say the very least, but that's why he's dropped in the weights. And he's bounced back to form in the flat since. He was a winner at Doncaster back in March and then again ran well at that track in June, finishing fourth off a mark of 72. Back over fences of a mark of 120. I think he'll be spot on for this. I think that run at Doncaster last time was to ensure he was absolutely ready for this. He wasn't expected to win, but he ran very respectably. And against slightly lesser horses than he was racing against last season, I think he can bounce back to winning form.
Highway Code for Rory then in the 5:20. To Sandown we go for their 7:40 next. This is a class 3 handicap over a mile. It's for 3-year-olds and older. A field of 8 here, Rory. Which ones are on the shortlist?
Not an easy race to unpick, it has to be said. But Tiger's Tail deserves to get a change of luck. Generally very consistent in handicaps, running in very strong races and a regular at Sandown as well. He was a very good fourth to the impressive Lightning Spear at Salisbury last time out. The previous two runs, he'd run well in biggish fields here off marks similar to the one he races off today. Normally wears a visor, gets a change of headgear, which might be beneficial to him. Cheek pieces on for the first time. Never runs a poor race here. And while there are less exposed horses in the race, I think he's guaranteed to give you a good run for your money.
Okay, and the final race we'll look at is the 8:15 at Sandown. This one is a class 4 handicap over a mile and a quarter. This one's for the 3-year-olds. Only 6 of them in the lineup here, Rory. And I thought this was quite tricky as well.
It is. There's not many with really positive profiles. There are a couple who've only had 3 runs. I'll mention them first. Atab is a new approach filly trained by Charlie Hills, ridden by Paul Hannigan. She won her maiden at Leicester and then finished last on her reappearance at April, but gave the impression that day that she wasn't ready, and Charlie Hills didn't have his horses particularly well forward at that stage. So she should do an awful lot better. The slight concern for me with her is that her win has come on heavy ground. It's going to be very different conditions at Sandown. You've got to respect her, and she's dropped to a mark of 75, and she could have run in and off to 75. This not to 80 is winnable enough, and she's one to watch in the betting. She could be a lot better than the bare form she's shown so far. And Harold Lloyd runs in a handicap for the first time, having been placed in maidens at Nottingham and over this course and distance on his last two starts. So there's bound to be more to come from him. But I wanted to be against the pair of them with Zamperini, who won at Wolverhampton last time out. And I think a few people might just think that he's like any horse who switches from turf, from taffeta to turf, they'll say, well, his form was on a different surface last time out. You can't trust that here. But he'd actually run very well on turf at Nottingham on his previous start, finishing second in a handicap off a mark of 67. He's £3 higher now, but he, aside from showing a slightly high head carriage, he won with plenty to spare in that maiden at Wolverhampton last time out, and he's clearly coming on leaps and bounds. So there's other horses in this race who you expect might show improved form now. He's already shown improved form, and once a horse gets on a roll, a three-year-old at this stage, they're liable to continue to improve. So rather than guess on who's going to step up now handicapping, I think Zamperini's worth sticking with.
Okay, Zamperini then. In the 8:15, let's just, as usual, have a quick summary, Rory, if you'll spin us through your selections one more time.
Another Royal in the 4 o'clock at Catterick. The 5:20 at Uttoxeter Highway Code. In the 7:40 at Sandown, Tiger's Tail. And in the 8:15 at Sandown, Zamperini.
Superb. Good stuff. Thank you very much, Rory. Good luck and enjoy on Wednesday.
Thank you very much indeed.
There you go. The thoughts of Rory Delaghi on Wednesday's racing. You'll hear it all on Racing Radio from 1:30 p.m. Stephen Powell, Ollie Pimlott and Craig Forsyth will be in the studio. It's Catterick, Lingfield and Uttoxeter on Wednesday afternoon. Sandown, Worcester and action of the Irish Sea from Killarney on Wednesday evening. So plenty to look forward to. Do tune in for all of that. Thank you very much for listening to this William Hill Racing podcast and enjoy Wednesday's action.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.